Hello and welcome to Glimmer of Genius, episode 28. This is a podcast all about Magic the Gathering. If you're new to the show, check us out on Facebook at Glimmer of Genius, bringing you all the latest from MTG news, deck ideas, tournament reports, and even some MTG finance. We are Glimmer of Genius. On the show today, Simon cannot be with us, but I am here with Grant. This week's episode is all about Modern. We go over GP Sao Paulo and talk quite a bit about Modern, including a budget brew for anyone thinking about starting Modern, or if you've got a friend who's interested in playing but hasn't got a deck, stick around for that. But first things first, Grant, what have you been up to this week in Magic?
I just haven't been doing anything Magic related for ages now. I was meant to run Standards last Tuesday, and it was also when the football was on. Because someone was on holiday, I was like, I need to turn up, because then if there are four people, like, I can't just, you know, not be there.
Right.
But I was the only person that turned up. I was like, okay, cool, I'll go there home then. So, yeah, and then, oh, it was a pre-release, that was it.
How was your pre-release?
I mean, it was okay. The only thing I opened that was, like, good was Crucible of Worlds, so that's just money, you know, actual cards, like, nothing really special.
How much is Crucible of Worlds now?
It's about $20, I think.
Oh, wow.
Down from about 60.
From 60? I thought it was expensive. I didn't realize it was $60.
I remember distinctly for when I first started playing Restore Balance, one of the versions had a one-off Crucible of Worlds, and I wanted one, and the cheapest on eBay was about 50, 55 quid.
Yeah.
And I got a severely damaged one, like just playable kind of thing, for like 25, 30 quid, which I was pleased with. So, yeah.
Wow. Well, clearly needed a reprint then.
Yeah. The thing is with pre-release, again, particularly because this was a core set, I wasn't that fussed about it. One of the guys I used to play with, Burgess Hill, I hadn't seen for a few months. He was just like, oh, do you want to come for a pre-release? And I probably wasn't going to. But I was like, yeah, give it a go, just sort of see you and catch up and stuff. Did the Midnight one in Trunk and Terror, because obviously still doing it.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was it, basically. I wasn't that massively involved. This definitely wasn't a set where I wanted to do, you know, like a double header or whatever. It was just,
no. You
know, this was just very... very sort of basic stuff, but it was, you know, it was good to catch up with someone more like, it was better just to catch up with someone at a Magic event. The pre-release was kind of irrelevant, to be honest.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Although I did like one of the insert in the pre-release box. It had like a little kind of how to make a sealed deck kind of guide.
Oh, yes.
And I was telling my cousin about it because he was drafting for like the second time, I think it was on Friday, and I should have kept it because it was perfect, because it had like, you know, you want between 16 and 18 lands, this is what a mana curve is, you know, this many spells, this many creatures. That, it was kind of a nice little visual guide. It was probably about the size of, like, you know, like an envelope kind of thing, unfolded, and it was just perfect kind of thing for new players, just to be able to give that out kind of thing.
That's decent.
So I quite like that. That was good about the box, I think.
No, that's pretty sweet. I like that they put that sort of thing in them. I haven't been to a pre-release since Ixalan, the first Ixalan, and I can't remember if they had them there, but it's nice to... The reality is, you know, newer players aren't necessarily going to do particularly well. It's not really about that. So if you can kind of eliminate the, I put everything I had in my sealed pool kind of moments, then that sort of thing, then it's pretty good. Generally, people are quite good and helpful, get the new players, you know, up to where they need to be. But at least that sort of thing is helpful to kind of reassure people.
I think that's the way it is at the moment, really, with pre-releases. Because I remember I used to always do them. Sometimes I used to do two or three, like in a weekend or whatever. And I don't think it was to do with the sets. Although, having said that, like, I definitely want to do a Return to Ravnica pre-release, I imagine, when that comes out.
Mm.
All the other ones I haven't really been that fussed about. And I don't know whether it's because, you know, earlier, of course, I'd only been recently playing for like 2-3 years properly. You know, it was nice to be at a set when it came out rather than just sort of being playing casually. But, oh, a new set's out. But, yeah, I really have kind of gone off them, really. You know, I don't know what that... Well, that is. Maybe it is more appealing to new players. I don't know really what.
Quite possibly. I usually like doing it as a bit of sealed practice. I don't really see it as that. I got a bit turned off when it was almost like you got a pre-constructed sealed thing, and I was like, this is definitely towards newer players, which is perfectly fine, but I always found it a bit weird, like you just got certain colour specific stuff. But it's fun, it's fine. I also quite like Corset pre-release as a bit of a palette cleanser.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, it was pretty, it was quite good actually. Like, the deck I built was just, it was like white black removal with lifelink, and it had, I got the you know, the 4-mana cat that makes the other 2 lifelink and cats when it attacks. That's just very, very strong.
Oh, yeah.
But also had loads of other lifelink, had like 2 Charter Knights and some other stuff. Mm-hmm. And lifelink combined with, I think I had 2 or 3 just non conditional black kill spells, or one of them was like -3/-3, the other one was just destroy creature. And I had 2 white, you know, exile permanents and it goes away enchantments.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so, it's probably the most consistent sealed deck I think I've put together, to be honest.
Nice.
Which was nice, but unfortunately we weren't paying for prizes.
Nah. That's the other thing that I get a bit miffed about. I don't understand why you wouldn't have at least something on the line. Otherwise it just feels pointless.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, it's unfortunately it depends on the place you're playing at, mostly, unfortunately.
Yeah. And also, I think the only day I never actually went to a pre-release because at the moment, Dice Loon are doing the double-header one, and I don't really like two-headed giant.
Yeah.
But I just don't.
I can't stand it.
No, yeah. So I don't really want to pay for it if I'm not going to do it.
Exactly, yeah.
And given the option of paying for it and then having to do it, and then paying for it and not having to do it, I'd rather not do it. But then I'd rather not have to pay for it in the first place if I'm not going to do it. So, like, it just seems a bit pointless. Yeah. So I could have gone to another venue, I suppose, but I didn't. I just thought, nah, I'll give it a miss. Got to be careful what I spend the old pennies on. But myself, though, I've been playing a lot of Modern. I did a league with Burn. That was quite fun. I went 3-2. Yeah. The most interesting thing that happened was playing against humans and then winning, and then playing against humans and losing. Because it was weird. Sometimes it just felt like, okay, they're just not doing anything. I just kill their human attack, kill their other human attack. Like, this is why is this deck so powerful? Other times they go Thalia's whatever it's called, Lieutenant, into Mantis Rider.
Yeah.
Into Mantis Rider, into Phantasmal Image copying Mantis Rider, and I'm like, I'm dead next.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was pretty sweet. It feels like with Phantasmal Image, you can really make some interesting plays.
Yeah, I like the variety, because sometimes you find yourself copying, you know, the opponent. You can copy the opponent's stuff, can't you?
I'm 99% certain you can, yeah.
Yeah, and I think I did that quite interestingly a few times when I was playing humans. That was quite fun, yeah.
No, the deck's pretty sweet. I haven't got a lot of the pieces for it in paper, so I'm just never going to do it. But after playing a few games of Burn, I actually also played quite a few matches against Blue-White Control, and now I've started playing Blue-White Control. And
okay.
I won't talk about it for a great length, because I know how much interest you have in that deck. But I've got to tell you, Jace the Mind Sculptor is the real deal. And
if you happen to have them, then yeah, I would definitely be playing them, I think.
Yeah. It's just really sweet. If you can resolve it, I hear a lot of people say, when he was unbanned, I was calling for him to be unbanned for a long time, so I didn't actually think he'd break Modern, and he hasn't. And it's not like he just goes in every deck or whatever. I hear a lot of people sort of, when they talk about the two most popular control archetypes in Modern, or control decks, sorry, in Modern, is either Jeskai Control or Blue-White. And everyone seems to be saying, oh, he's terrible in Jeskai, but he's really good in Blue-White. Yeah. And that's the only deck he's really good in, is just Blue-White Control. That may well be true, and it's just fun to be able to play a deck with Jace in it. As I say, if you can resolve it and then like get multiple brainstorm activations, you really feel like you're doing it. It's just so good. It really feels like a deck like Blue White is really what it was kind of missing, because you get to a point where you might stabilize, but you're actually quite low on resources, and Jace just really helps with that.
Yeah.
Search for Azkanta is really good as well. Really, both surprised and not surprised has actually made it into Modern, because it's really powerful. In Standard, it's great. And then you think, oh, is it going to be good enough for a format like Modern where, you know, it's tapping out and effectively doing nothing for a whole turn? And the incremental advantage it gains you is quite slow. But again, actually, it's really great in the Blue-White deck, because you just filter your draws. And even in the Jeskai Control, you're just going to be filtering what you're getting. So if you can take that turn off to get it down, or even just playing it late in the game, it's going to help you to get an advantage. When it flips into the land, it's just insane.
Yeah.
It's just so good. I've been really, really enjoying that. And I had a chat with Aaron, because Aaron was on, was talking about Blue-White Control as well, saying he quite likes the deck at the moment. And he was talking to me about Terminus. So I don't know if you've seen, but a lot of the lists run quite a lot of Terminus in the main deck.
Well,
yeah.
The draw with Jace then.
Yes.
Yeah. Nice, I like that.
Yeah, and you've also got a little interplay with cards like Cryptic Command and Ott, so like the potential for like massive blowouts. If you like, imagine just playing a Cryptic Command to counter a spell and then miracling into the Terminus would be quite unpleasant, which is pretty cool. And so yeah, I've been giving that a spin, and at the moment it feels really powerful. And it was weird, because like you look at a card like that and you think it feels quite clunky, but actually against the right sort of matchups, it's just obscene.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the best deck in Modern. I don't think there is a best deck in Modern. You hear a lot of people say Humans is the best deck, or they might say Hollow One's the best deck, but I think it's really hard to actually find that still in Modern at the moment. I don't know how you feel about it, but...
I haven't played Modern for about 2 or 3 months now, but just because I haven't had the want to, be honest.
Fair enough.
But I do like that it's varied, and I like that, despite the unbannings, that nothing has dominated it at all. So I think you're right in saying there is no best deck in Modern. I think that's the way it should be, and looking at recent events and stuff, it's shows that that is the case, and like you said, that Chase definitely isn't dominating anything. And I like that if I wanted to go back into Modern, I could basically just take any deck I've played before that is decent and not just have it handed to me just because I've picked the wrong deck for the meta kind of thing, if that makes sense. So yeah. That's exactly what I think you should aim to stay at, because that's really nice.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I know a lot of people might be like, oh, I like to try and attack a meta or what have you. And I think with Modern, you just have to accept that it's a bit of a different beast. And yep. I don't think you necessarily, you hear a lot of people say, oh, just pick a deck and play that, you'll be rewarded. And I think there is an element of that as well. But I think it's more accurate if you just play a lot of Modern, you just kind of know, play against a lot of decks, just get your mate to maybe just like sleeve up something that's quite popular, like Hollow One, and just practice against certain decks. Actually, yeah. That gives you just as much of an edge of playing with the same deck again and again and again.
Yeah, I agree.
Modern does reward you heavily for knowing not only how to play your own deck, but actually just knowing how to deal with opposing decks. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with the Karak Clan Ironwork deck, the KCI deck.
I love that it's a thing, and I particularly love the version which is Scrambled Egg, which does the same thing but kills them with that, shuffling their own library, which is fantastic. But if I haven't mentioned before, I'll talk about when we talk through the top eight. But I can't ever want to see myself play that deck because it seems so intensive. Like, just every single game, you just would want to have to take like half an hour to sit down and do something really basic, like just to do some drawing with crayons just to give your mind a break. I appreciate it's a thing, I like how it works, but I just can't think of anything more exhausting than going to like a 7-round event and basically failing probably at the end of the day just because your brain stopped working because the deck is just so hard to play.
I think it'd probably get to a point where if you do it enough times, you'd be quite a whiz at it. And also, depending on how stubborn your opponent is, you could get to points where you say, look, I'm just going to do this infinite times to search my library and shuffle my library, like pick up your library. It's like that whole thing with creating infinite mana and then Dustwatch Recruiters. You just go, right.
That's the thing. I think I also don't like playing decks where, like, on paper you've won, but you will occasionally get an opponent that will ask you to explain it all, or... just playing by the rules, you have to sort of take your time doing stuff. You don't want to get warnings for that. And like, I don't think I'd want a deck that wins very mechanically, if that makes sense, because you will get stubborn opponents, or you will have situations where you know what you're going to do and you mess it up and then the whole deck just loses kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, no, I hear what you're saying. I was speaking to Shy about his opinions. He's been playing Lantern Control quite a bit. And he was, I said to him, how are you feeling actually playing? She played it for a little while now. And he just said, it's not that I don't like the deck. It's not that I think the deck's bad, but it is just so exhausting because you have to just be on it.
Same with Lantern Control. I think that's a terrible deck just because it's awful. and just is like the worst things about any game ever all put together in one thing. But also just as a player, like, you make one slip up, you lose. Every time I beat Lantern Control, it's because the opponent's made a stupid decision. They've been playing perfectly up until that point. I just don't understand why someone would want to, one, play a deck that's so degenerate, and two, play a deck that punishes them so hard for making the simplest of mistakes. I don't see where the pleasure is at all.
No, I think it's a tough one, isn't it? It's just, I've thought about playing Lantern before. Yeah, I think on balance, it just wouldn't be a satisfying experience. Even if you were to play with it and win with it.
Yeah, it's just like, you get to the end of the match, you've won, cool, you've won a match, but your opponent is angry at you for just being the most boring person in the entire world, and the game hasn't really done anything, you've just stopped anything from happening. Like, again, where's the satisfaction?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. So why Blood Moon can sometimes feel quite unpleasant sometimes as well, because it creates situations where you're actually just not playing Magic anymore.
Exactly, yeah, and I can't stand that. Like, okay, Restore Balance, I can't really talk too much, because again, I get to a situation sometimes where just everything's gone and everyone's lands have gone, and that's quite degenerate, but the way I do it is at least in kind of a silly way that is quite easy to stop, if that makes sense, and you can win the game without having that condition. That's just kind of the perfect situation kind of thing. So to me, that's how I at least justify my slightly degenerate play with that.
Indeed. So speaking of a top eight, we were going to mention a little bit about GP Sao Paulo, which was just over a week ago now. There was one KCI deck in the top eight, I think. Yep. It was just the one. And then you had Amulet Titan, Red Green Eldrazi. Say that again, sorry?
I haven't seen that for quite a while, Amulet, to be honest.
No, it used to be a bit of a sort of boogeyman. But
yeah, particularly after the banning of Sun Bloom and stuff.
Yeah, but I don't think anything particularly different with it.
No, so I think it's just right deck, right time kind of thing. Something like Merfolk, you get that popping up, or Boggles, just, you know, it happens.
Yeah, because it's a very different angle to something like KCI. But you've also got one Red Green Eldrazi deck, one Mardu Pyromancer deck, a Tron deck, and an Abzan deck, and an Affinity deck. Oh, sorry, there was two Mardu Pyromancer decks. I apologise.
Yeah.
So probably one of the most diverse top eights that I've seen for a little while.
Yeah, this is what I like to see.
I think it's great. As I say, the Amulet Titan deck's not anything particularly special. Winning with Primeval Titans, abusing the Amulet of Vigor to really make your lands work for you. Crackline Ironworks. If anyone is not familiar with how it works, you basically recur artifacts many, many times with the help of Scrap Trawler, which is whenever it or another artifact you control is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, return to your hand target artifact with lesser converted mana cost to your hand. And then Mere Retriever, when it dies, return another target artifact card from your graveyard to your hand. And then you have Crackline Ironworks, which you can sacrifice an artifact to gain two mana to your mana pool. So you end up with situations where you have a Scrap Trawler and a Mere Retriever in play, or multiples of these effects, and you sacrifice cheap artifacts for mana, either the Mere Retriever itself or just the fact that you're getting a trigger with Scrap Trawler. And then you can return the cheap artifacts back to your hand, and then with the mana you've just created with Crackline Ironworks, you can play them again, which enables you to then sacrifice them to Crackline Ironworks to continue and continue and continue. And ultimately you're doing it with a card like Chromatic Star, which says whenever it's put into a graveyard from play, draw a card. Or Ickle Wellspring, which is when it enters or goes to grave, you draw a card. So you can draw through a lot of your library to ultimately find Pyrite Spellbomb, which says pay one red, sacrifice it, deals two damage to any target. And you just keep throwing that at them with the ability to get it back with the retrievers or the trawlers and sacrifice it all over again. So that's kind of what it does. It's not a very interactive deck. If you're just playing something like, Affinity or even Humans, then not an awful lot you can really do to disrupt a lot of the elements, because you can kill things like a Mere Retriever or a Scrap Trawler, but they can just kind of get them back. The longer the game goes on, I think the better for them in a way, because they've got cards like Inventor's Fair, which allows them to tutor artifacts back to their hand. It's pretty powerful, also using Ancient Stirrings, which, I don't know about you, but Ancient Stirrings seems to be appearing a lot. It's kind of like the Green Ponder. If anyone's not familiar with it, look at the top five cards for one green of your library. You may reveal a colourless card from among them and put it into your hand, and then put the rest on the bottom of your library. So this is played in the Red-Green Eldrazi deck, the Crackline Ironworks deck, the Amulet Titan deck. So that's three of the top eight decks so far. The Tron deck, and it's also played in decks like Lantern Control as well.
I think the reason is just that it's, even regardless of the whole colourless thing, it's a one mana, it's one green to look for a land and put that into your hand. Like, that's good enough. And then, of course, you combine it with the fact that it looks for Eldrazi and artifacts, and that's why it's really good. I think that's why. The fact that if it's hidden on land, I don't think anyone would really play it very much apart from the specific like Lantern or Eldrazi deck. But because it's land and something else, that's why it's very good, I think.
I think it's a great card, and I think it just strikes me as it's been seeing more and more play over the coming months.
Yeah, I'm glad they got reprinted in M25 because it needed a reprint.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a clever little reprint. Maybe they saw something happening, or they thought it would just continue to see play, or maybe the price of it was just a bit much. Do you think, I don't actually consider reprints an indication of whether or not a card will be banned or not. I mean, look at Sensei Divining Top.
Yeah.
It's a perfect example of a card that got reprinted and then immediately banned. Am I being crazy?
Yeah.
But if you think, right, so that's four, we would said earlier, that was quite a diverse top eight. With the exception of an extra copy of Mardu Pyromancer, you've got seven very different decks there. But four out of the seven, all playing Ancient Stirrings.
I think, I don't know, five or six, I think six is quite a good number for that. I don't think it makes any of these decks, like, I don't think they wouldn't be able to function without it. And I think decks that do run it aren't dominating, if that makes sense. So I wouldn't say yet, but I see your point, yeah. It's a possibility, but I think it would have to be, one, in a deck that wouldn't do very very well without it, and two, that deck was dominating, because I think everything's quite mixed. I don't think it would do yet, but I also wouldn't be too surprised if it happened. But to me, I'd say like a 30% chance if I was to chuck some numbers at it. But it's a good idea.
You're going to put me on the spot, 30% chance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. I don't think it will get banned. And no. I just thought, you know.
It's a good pattern, yeah.
Yeah. I noticed it's there quite a bit. And if you remember the rationale behind the banning of Smuggler's Copter, and obviously that was in every deck, very, very overrepresented and doing much more than an Ancient Stirring, which, you know, Ancient Stirrings, it's quite a passive card. You know, you pay one mana, bit of library manipulation, bit of card selection. It's not as... Is it as good as a card like Ponder?
I think it's, to me, the fairer comparison. Obviously, Smuggler's Copter is a fair one in terms of it was everything. I think the fairer comparison is to a Tomb of Aether.
Okay.
Because it's the same mana cost. It was in every single deck that had green in it. It wasn't, like, essential, but they banned it because it made those decks a lot less reliable kind of thing.
Mm.
I think this would be the same thing. That I don't think they have enough to ban it, but if they did, the decks would just find something else or not run it or something. But I think if it gets to a point where, you know, these Amulet decks or Tron, whatever, gets to a stage where they are getting a bit too reliable, that probably is the card they'll go for, and that probably will make a difference, but I don't think we're quite there yet. So I think, to me, it's a bit more comparable to a Tomb of Aether in terms of cards that have been recent that have been banned because they're very, very good, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And actually, I think what is probably a good counterpoint to it not being banned is because it's all the things that you're saying it is, and also it's all the things you're saying it isn't. A lot of decks are using it, so it's not pushing all of these things to be too much. It's not pushing one of these any one things to be too much. So the impact of saying, okay, let's say, just picking a deck at random, let's go with KCI, because that's actually quite, that's you know, that's on trend at the moment, is KCI. So if that all of a sudden Wizards looked at that and thought, well, this Ironworks deck's too powerful, and we think Ancient Stirrings is really pushing it over the top, let's ban Ancient Stirrings, it would actually be quite a lot of ripples to the other decks. So I think that because of that, it probably means Ancient Stirrings wouldn't be likely to get banned.
Yeah, I agree.
They'd have to say, right, okay, let's go with something like Kraklan Ironworks to either just shoot that deck in the head, or we'll say get rid of one of the Trawlers or the Retrievers, just to kind of cripple it a bit.
Yeah, the sort of the Kraklan Ironworks thing, because, of course, the deck used to run, it did exist as a deck before, but it used to run stuff like Faith's Reward, you know, that 4-mana... put everything in play that was put there this turn card.
Oh, yes.
And I remember experimenting with this deck because I did like how weird it was. But the issue with that, of course, is you always have to have that 4-mana floating to be able to do stuff. And obviously, like the stars, the spheres, the Terrarians, whatever, like they don't give you mana, they just convert it. So it's kind of this situation similar to Storm where you always had to have like a slightly higher net mana than you needed. And that meant you had to have like Lotus Blooms and all that kind of business. But alongside Clan Ironworks, there's also this other deck which is called Scrambled Eggs, because the original one was called Eggs, because you blew them up and did stuff. I don't think I've mentioned before, but basically it's the same exact same deck. And looking at it now, of course, this is a bit out of date because Scrap Trawler wasn't a thing back then. You could easily put Scrap Trawler in instead to probably make this a bit more reliable.
Yeah.
Basically, it's the same deck as Eggs, but rather than the win condition being... What is the win condition normally in? Just Banefire or something, isn't it?
In what? KCI?
Yeah.
No, so the main win condition is Pyrite Spellbomb, because you sack it to do 2 damage to something, and then you can retrieve it.
Okay. Yeah. In the original Eggs one, I think the way was it just made a much higher net mana, and used to just do like Banefires or whatever if you wanted to, or I've seen some that you had like Eldrazi Titans and stuff. But yeah, in Scrambled Eggs, the win condition is there's a card called Bis Raw Deal, which I would be very surprised if you know, from Future Sight.
It rings a bell, but I couldn't tell what it does.
It's about $8 now, even though it has no right being it, because it's just goes in this deck and this deck only. Right. So it's black and 2 mana. Which is search target player's library for a card, remove that card from the game, and then they shuffle their library. But it's got an ability called Gravestorm, which, like a lot of cards in Future Sight, was this mechanic was only on this card, which is very similar to Storm, but you copy the spell for each time something's gone to your graveyard this turn.
Okay.
So you do all the whole eggs thing, you get them back for face reward or scrap troll or whatever you want to do, depending on, you know, what version you're running. You do Bitter Ordeal, and you look for, like, I don't know, 10, 15 cards, whatever. Which, of course, is quite fun, because you get to basically just take apart someone's deck, particularly if it's like a combo deck. But then you put in a card called, an artifact called Psychogenic Probe, which, again, I'd be very surprised if you know.
Definitely haven't heard of that one.
it's a two mana artifact, which is a rare from Mirrodin, which, to whenever a spell or ability causes a player to shuffle his or her library, it does 2 damage to them. So you do some exploding, you do this, you know, 5-ish, you know, if they're playing Death Shadow, you probably only have to do it about 5 times, but you do it like 10 times. You put Psychogenic Probe into play, then you do Bitter Ordeal. You go, look, okay, I've blown out some eggs like 10 times. I'll remove 10 cards, doesn't really matter. You're going to have to shuffle your library 10 times. You take 20 damage and you die. So this deck kills the opponent by making them shuffle the library. So
stop hitting yourself.
This is the kind of deck I want to play. So looking at the KCI deck, like, it's good. It's like a, you know, functional deck. It's a lot better because of Scrap Crawler. But every time I see it, I always just think I could be running the version that makes the opponent kill themselves by shuffling the library by doing the same thing, but it's with 4 probes and 4 Bitter Ordeals. So that's my opinion of it, anyway.
Okay, what else was in there that's worth talking about?
I'll send that in case you want to link it in the...
Because it's funny. So Red Green Eldrazi seems familiar. I think it was vaguely a thing for a while. Maybe it was in Standard, I'm not sure.
Red Green Eldrazi?
Yeah, am I being...
It was definitely a thing when Eldrazi came out first in Standard. I do not remember seeing this deck. And I think the reason why we didn't see this deck is because when Eldrazi was a thing in Modern, we didn't have Bloodbraid Elf until recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Boreal Druid really threw me. And it really makes sense because, of course, it's the only one mana dwarf that taps for one colourless, I think.
Does it actually produce wastes, though?
It produces one colourless mana, which, given it's a snow permanent, can be either colourless or snow. I'll just look up the Oracle text now, but it produces colourless, so it can't be any other kind of mana apart from snow, I don't think. Yeah, adds colourless, yeah.
Okay, so not the Eldrazi mana.
Yeah, no, it does, yeah. That is the same thing now. Remember, the generic numbers are only costs, you can't produce that mana anymore.
Okay. That's...
If it's not got a colour, it is Eldrazi mana.
So there isn't anything that produces generic mana, it will always produce. A bit like how Korok Ironworks produces...
Who Eldrazi mana? Yeah, it's impossible to make colourless mana now. It has to be... Well, that is the same thing, but you know what I mean.
With you.
But yeah, so what I liked about this one was that you can Bloodbraid Elf into Mastery Shape of Boreal Druid, Noble Hierarch, Eldrazi Obligator, Scavenging Ooze, and the only ones you can't go into are Thought Not Seer and Reality Smasher.
Yep.
And you can also Bloodbraid Elf into Ancient Steroids, which we were talking about, Lightning Bolt, or Dismembers as well.
Yep.
So I kind of like the Eldrazi deck because I miss playing with Thought Not Seer and Mastery Shaper in Standard.
Yeah.
And I kind of don't like Eldrazi decks being a bit too degenerate with the whole Tron Land thing. And I think this, although Bloodbraid Elf obviously is a bit questionable by some people, I do like how this uses Bloodbraid Elf not to go into like Liliana and it gets a bit degenerate, just to go into just like value, like Mastery Shapers and stuff. That's just, I really like that.
Yeah.
So
I think it's a really sweet deck. The only thing I don't like is the Grove of the Burn Willows, but I get it because they're obviously in there to make the wastes, but there's a really low basic land count anyway. It's like one mountain, two forests. Just run more basics.
Because I'm looking at this, and the only thing, I don't have a playset of Bloodbraid Elves. I don't think I have a playset of Ancient Serums, but in terms of decks I could get into in Modern, this would actually be really cheap for me, because again, I just disregard the whole Grove of the Burn Willows thing. Mm. I've already got the Temple, already got the Cavern of Souls, whatever. This could be a really easy one for me to try, because this seems quite fun. Like, just going into value with Mastery Shapers and Elves and stuff, it looks quite fun to play with.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like... a weird Jund deck in a sense, isn't it?
Yeah, and I like that. I just like, there's nothing, you know, you look at Craftland Ironworks, it's got its own thing. You look at Amulet Titan, again, if you haven't come across these decks before as like a new player, like it's, you know, would be very confusing and you just go, oh, okay, I guess I just lose kind of thing. But this just seems to be just value kind of thing. Nothing really too sneaky about it. And I kind of like that, to be honest.
Definitely. I think if you want to check it out, I will post it in the description, in the show notes as well. But yeah, it's got some nice plays. I mean, you've still got the ability to kind of do the Eldrazi powering out sort of stuff. So like Noble Hierarch into Eldrazi Temple. That's turn two Thought-Not Seer. Or just double temple.
For yeah, I missed doing that with the temples, to be honest. And I think it needed something, and Bloodbraid Elf seems to be the very unlikely help for this. So that's a bit strange.
But it's like, it's quite cool though, because I mean, you've got a bit of variety that that's not the only thing you can do. So that you can do that, and it's pretty sweet. Yeah, the whole Cascade thing and Ancient Stirrings, you've actually got quite a decent amount of card advantage and card selection.
Exactly. You look at the decks above and you go, oh, you know, they'll sideboard in whatever and it will stop this going off. Or, you know, you put in a Stony Silence and what does Crowd Clan Ironworks do? You know, that kind of thing.
Mm.
But with this, even if they go like, oh, I'll remove all the Bloodbraid Elves from your deck with something, you know, you just go, okay, fine, I'll just chuck a Reality Smasher or a Thought Seer at you, you know, or bolt stuff to death. You know, this, like you said, it just seems a lot more robust and a lot less one tricky than the rest.
Yeah, yeah. From a blue-white control perspective, like playing that deck for a little while, this has quite a lot of different angles. Like, you know, I've got to be prepared for a turn two Thought-Not Seer or turn three Reality Smasher or Bloodbraid Elf. And all of these things are basically card advantage of some way. Like if a Reality Smasher actually resolves, I've got to spend cards to get rid of it more than I want. Thought-Not Seer is going to tag something on the way in. And Bloodbraid Elf, even if you counter it, it's going to cascade. Like, there's so many nice little extra things. Matter Reshaper is a pain in the ass as well. No, it's a really sweet little deck. I like it. And Mardo Pyromancer is doing quite well at the moment as well. Obviously, I had two in this top eight. I don't know if there's an awful lot of variation between the two. Lilies of the Veil, I think the numbers are slightly different, but it's more or less the same thing. This actually, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Death Shadow, but with just obviously less permission. Just playing some very aggressive creatures, getting value, and just using its mana every turn just to turn through its deck really quickly between like Faithless Lootings, Collective Brutalities, killing all your stuff, and just playing efficient, really aggressively costed stuff.
It's quite funny that it's called Mardu, and the only white card is Lingering Souls.
I know, right? It's weird.
Although I do like the cheeky three off of Campbell, Council Allocation, and the sideboard. I always love that card. I love playing in the standard, in the human deck I had that. Then, of course, humans in modern became a thing and he's being played in that. I think everyone knows he exists now. He's been put in so many decks since, I just love him.
He is pretty cool. Yeah. When I first saw him, I was a bit like, what the hell? But, he's the real deal. And, yeah, as you say, Lingering Souls. It's funny that that card is so good that they'll happily almost kind of butcher their mana base just to be able to play Lingering Souls. Because you could totally just not play that card, and you could probably find some equally useful black or red card with flashback or some bonus to being in the graveyard, and not play Lingering Souls, and make your mana so much better, make your Blood Moon so much better.
Bump in the Night would do it. I always love that card.
Yeah, Bump in the Night.
The thing that throws me off about this is you don't even need the white mana to play it. You've got a discard outlet with Lily.
Yep.
You discard Lingering Souls, you flash it back. You're playing two mana for a 2/1/1 flyer. That's still fine.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
You just take the white mana out. You don't even change what cards are in it at all.
Exactly. It makes your Faithless Lootings so good. Because I think Faithless Looting is really what kind of pushes the deck. Because obviously you look at Bedlam Reveler. It's never cast for its mana cost. It's always going to have the instant sorceries in the bin. It's just so good. It just draws this deck actually... Playtesting with it just draws so many cards.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, it's really good, really solid. It's quite difficult to play because you sort of deal with the threat, but you've got the flashback elements, which actually make it quite resilient. So yeah, nice little deck. And then you've got Tron. Nothing too new with Tron, really. Tron lands, Ancient Stirrings, things to play with all your Tron lands.
Big stuff.
Khan Liberated is a 4/4. That's quite aggressive.
Oof. Tron's not expensive enough.
No. But yeah, it's doing its thing. Still proves to be a very powerful deck. And then we've got Abzan Traverse.
Sure.
So Delirium and Tarmogoyf style stuff. So it's playing four Mishra's Baubles to help with both of those things. Delirium with Grim Flayer and Traverse the Evenwald. Almost like the Abzan answer to Ancient Stirrings is Traverse the Evenwald.
Yeah.
It's doing a very similar thing. So, you know, almost had an additional copy of Ancient Stirrings in this top eight with that, I'm going to say. And then we have Affinity as well, which is very, very stock. I mean, the only thing that's really changed with this Affinity, with Affinity in general, is the inclusion of Khan Scion of Urza. Yeah. For obvious reasons, it likes playing with artifacts. So, yeah, this version happens to be playing islands rather than mountains. I mean, there's not really much more I can
running
say.
Damping Sphere in the sideboard, that's interesting.
Yeah.
It's going to get played at some point, but it's I didn't really think about how good a fit it was in...
Well, it's an artifact.
Exactly, and it's only two mana.
Yeah. It's nice. I think why it kind of gets the nod over other sideboard answers is it's good against Storm and it's good against Tron.
Yeah.
Which is quite cool. I don't always like bringing in... Because people always said to me, oh, why don't you just bring in against like Storm, Aethersworn Canonist? And I was like, I don't really want an answer that's also an artifact so that they can kill it with all of their artifact hate, which they're definitely sideboarding in game two. Yeah. But I think just because Damping Sphere does those two things and probably is useful in other decks as well. So this even has applications against KCI. They're going to lose mana for what they're having to do.
Yeah,
it's nice. It's interesting. But there's nothing really special about it. Not playing main deck, etch champions, which you normally see at least one or two in. But yeah, Affinity is still a deck. Still going to be a thing that people are going to have to be prepared for. It hasn't gone anywhere. So yeah, that was the top eight. But yeah, nice to see Modern in, I think, what we both feel like is a relatively good space.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's nice.
So what's this brew you've got? This budget brew.
Okay, so I've always had about two or three kind of stock decks on Tapped Outside for, you know, if someone was like, oh, I need to get into Modern, like, can you recommend anything? And I found a few budget decks that were quite fun, and obviously some of these need a bit of updating, and I'll go through cards that come to mind straight away when I talk about this deck, because I haven't looked at it for about a year or so. But my cousin's looking to get back into, well, not get back into, is getting into Magic SCP, but we're trying to look about getting into a format sort of like Modern, something new. He doesn't have to keep buying new cards. And I said to him, I've got loads of different budget decks to kind of work out, you know, what you like playing, and I'll link you some stuff, because most of them are kind of red or green generally. Obviously blue's a bit difficult, white can be a bit expensive, and not so much black, but it's, and generally speaking, of course, they're mono-coloured. Well, this one's mono-green, basically. I'll say now, it can obviously include the, because it goes with Devotion, it can obviously include the, is it the 4-mana Gigantosaur, whatever it's called?
Oh, yeah.
If you like, but four's probably a bit steep, but definitely include the Steel Leaf Champion, is it? The three green one from the last set that wasn't...
Aether Revolt?
Yeah, from Dominaria. Steel Leaf Champion, isn't it?
Oh, sorry, I'm thinking... I always get that confused with the artifacty one from the other set.
Yeah, Dominaria, Steel Leaf Champion, I think it is.
Okay, yeah.
5-4, whatever. So he can go in. But basically, it, like I said, it runs around Devotion because it uses the card Aspect of the Hydra, which you remember from Born of the Gods.
Yep.
So, one green mana instant, type creature gets +X, where X is your devotion to green. So, obviously, you run creatures that only have green in the mana cost. There are no colourless generic mana things in any of these creatures apart from one. So, it runs Avatar the Resolute, if you remember from Dragons.
Double
green, 3-2, reach trample. It enters with a 1-1 counter for each other creature with 1-1 counter on it.
Oh,
so
yes.
To play with that, it runs Experiment 1, which obviously evolves, so it has 1-1 counter on it. It also runs Scavenging Ooze, which obviously potentially can have 1-1 counters on it, and also runs Stranglerout Geist, which is the 2 green mana 2-1 haste with Undying.
Undying, yes.
Extension, yeah. So obviously, yeah, lots of green mana costs. It also runs Dryad Militant, because it puts instant sorceries into exile rather than the graveyard, which just messes around with deck's main deck, but you obviously put sideboard if you prefer. It also runs Dungrove Elder, which is what I used to run in my Treefolk deck, which is the 3 mana XX equals the number of forests, but it also has hexproof. Just generally, it's a pain to deal with, so that's quite fun if you're doing just forests. It runs Garrett Companion, which is the double green 3-2 trample.
Nice.
And Leatherback Baloth, which is the triple
green. Yep.
Probably not as good as Steel Leaf Champion now, but obviously was the big green guy from before. There is also probably an argument running that big dinosaur, I don't know. But anyway. So it runs, 4 Aspect of the Hydra, a couple of Dismembers, 4 Vines of Vastwood, and 4 Rancors, and that is the entire deck, basically.
You just beat face.
So, yeah, I've called it Disregard Meta Smash Face, effectively. No card in it, apart from maybe some of the sideboard options, is more than $4 last time I checked.
Cool.
Dungrave Elves $4 for Scavenging Users under $4. Yeah, so nothing's over $4. So if you want to go super cheap with the sideboard, you can easily build this deck for under $50, I'd say. But yeah, just simple stuff, big stuff that is going to have Trample or something either by itself or Rancor. You know, you'll get to a situation where you'll have two or three things in the field. You'll attack with them. They'll go block these, maybe in a favourable way. It doesn't really matter. Your aspect of the Hydra one, it'll get like +8/+8, and they'll just die, basically. So, yeah, it's a pretty simple deck, but it's a nice cheap deck, and it lets people get used to what they want to play in Modern. And I've said to my cousin that if you want to build a cheap deck, I'd say build this one, because it's got simplicity, but also some little bits of, you know, things you can customise with Vines of Vastwood, or, you know, fun little sideboard options. Like I said, that Dryad Militant screwing over Flashback and other kind of decks mainboard is quite fun. So, yeah, nice and simple.
I like it. Putting Rancors on stuff and just going to town, that's just fun.
Like, yeah.
People are going to love that.
Adds devote. I mean, again, what? You go, okay, so you go like turn one, experiment one. You go like turn two, either something else that's one mana or a Rancor, or you just, you know, play a Garrett's Companion or something. You know, turn three, you could put another Rancor on something or play something else, or Vines of Vastwood, and then... I mean, yeah. So, okay, let's say that. So you go experiment one, turn one. You then go Garrett's Companion, turn two. Experiment one obviously evolves. You go turn three. What could you do? You could go like a Rancor or a Vines of Vastwood to protect it, or you could go Vines of Vastwood kicked an aspect of the Hydra, and you're doing, I don't know, like, is that about 10 or 12 damage or something? Yeah. Just, you know, again, you can get lucky with your curve and just do silly damage very, very quickly. And I think in a meta where Death Shadow is the thing, and they go like, oh, yeah, I'll take 8 damage, and you can just go, yeah, take an extra 6, like, I think that's quite dangerous.
Yeah.
Particularly if no one knows what this deck is, which, again, speaking of someone that got into Modern while playing a Knights Tribal deck, which no one had ever come across before, you do have quite a lot of an advantage by playing a deck that no one knows what you're doing, so... yeah, good fun.
Exactly. People look at you play a creature on turn two, and they go, okay, that's fine, I can deal with that. And then all of a sudden, like, yeah, you enchant it up or Vines of Arsenal, and they're like, oh okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to die next turn, I see.
Yeah, again, it's just great, because they can go like, oh, I'll take this amount of damage, or leave, you know, I'll have 6 or 7 life, I can kill you next turn kind of thing. You just go one mana spell plus, you know, they don't... No, everyone can see a one mana +4/+4 or +3/+3 spell. But because all those pump spells are in Infect, everyone knows what they are. But you look at Aspect of the Hydra, which isn't on any deck, they just don't see the +6 or +7 coming.
No.
I think it would be really nice just for new players to bring people down a level with that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Oh, you could even put in like one or two copies of the Become Immense one as well. Just for sort of finishing people off sort of thing. You know, they killed a few of your things. You don't need stuff in your graveyard. Just delve it away. Kill them.
Yeah.
That's sweet. I reckon... I know I would have enjoyed that if I was... that was the first deck that was given to me for Modern. I'd have been like, sweet.
Yeah.
That's all for now from us. Thank you very much for listening. We can be found at Facebook, at Glimmer of Genius, as well as our podcast website, glimmerofgenius.podbean.com. Also, if you're interested in even more Magic the Gathering content... check out my YouTube channel, Vincent Games. But in the meantime, thanks very much for listening, and stay tuned for more.
Later. Bye.